Jema. So we will continue volume 13, and we are reading something about the ashram, and as I said, we'll have probably one or two more readings on the ashram from volume 13. But since the ashram implies many things and it's a whole package, so in the fitness of things, I thought I'll read a letter or two of Sri Aurobindo, because very often this ashram is very difficult for people to understand, because from the ashram we have certain stock ideas of very, very nice saintly people, whether they are saints or not, but they look saintly, who are wearing, you know, some clothes which mark that they are renunciates and basically meditating monks. Yes, these are the images which come, and these are the images which are also fed when we look at life. I personally have been to a number of them. So even when they don't have a particular dress, they are supposed to be disinclined in life. So like, you don't expect a television going on in some room within the ashram. So I remember even I, after reading Madan Sri Aurobindo, one of my first encounters, so I had to give something to someone. And when I went there, I saw the football match, the person, not football, cricket match, the person was watching. And my instant thought was, "Are?" And then I realized that, see, the same old fellow has come. Because this is how we have certain standard ideas about what ashram is. But this is an ashram not of creating saints and sages, but supermen who are totally engaged with life, and within every sphere of life, the transformation has to take place. Plus, as I said, it's a heterogeneous group, not just some devotees and disciples. So it contains all kinds of sections of humanity which I hear. So I'll just read two letters from Sri Aurobindo before I dive into the mother's writing, just to put things in perspective. So there's a question which has been asked to Sri Aurobindo. "I wish you had chosen or called some better stuff." Perhaps somebody like Krishna Prem, Dilip Kumar Roy, obviously. Because Krishna Prem was the one with whom he was corresponding. And I think many of us know about him, but that's not so important. Basically, it applies to elsewhere. It's about people like Vivekananda. It has been implied there. Now, Sri Aurobindo's reply is very interesting. "Yes, but would the better stuff, supposing it to exist, be typical of humanity? To deal with a few exceptional types would hardly solve the problem." Now he says something very interesting. "And would they consent to follow my path? That is another question. Because they know the difficulties. Little evolution, you know the difficulty." Sri Aurobindo says about that, "If I knew all the challenges, I would myself think twice." Because change of nature is something which has, even the great yogis, rishis, when you hear, you know. "And if they were put to the test, would not the common humanity suddenly reveal itself? That is still another question." So it's a tremendous pressure for transformation. It brings out elements which are hidden. Ordinarily we move with facades. What happens in our personal life, private life is a different thing altogether. So I remember once going to that Narmada where, you know, the Sri Aurobindo had the Kali's darshan. So I was taken to the temple and I saw, they said here in this particular picture with that, you know, Sri Aurobindo had the darshan. And I said, why they have not kept it clean? So my first urge was, what nonsense is this? So I went and I asked, who is the person responsible? They directed me to the head priest. Now I barged into his room, literally, because I knocked and nobody is opening. What I saw was more horrifying. I told what I had to say. I said, this is how you people came. He was all in Girwa, but so I came out and I picked up a cloth and I started doing it myself. So there are things which don't, you see, humanity has learned to live with masks, but this is not a place for masks. So they drop down. So first is that if you are put under the pressure of transformations, things will come out. You can't keep them hidden inside. So this one part that Sri Aurobindo says, and it's much easier to do self-realization. than to, I mean, much easier when I say compared to others. Nothing is easy. Nothing is easy in life. So forget about self-realization. But it's relatively easier because you are focused. It's like I often say that, you know, supposing you have to do only cooking. So that's one part. But supposing you have to do cooking, you have to do cleaning, you have to manage the child, you have to also go and do work. Now it's a far more difficult work. So when you're focused on one aspect, it's much easier than when you have to simultaneously, the whole nature is being worked upon. So the second question is, in the ashram one finds that people with forceful personalities, okay, I'll come to the end because, So it's a long passage. So Sri Aurobindo says, it is necessary or rather inevitable that in an ashram, which is a laboratory, as Adhar Das puts it, there is a character called Adhar Das, we need not go into the detail. So he describes it as a laboratory. For a spiritual and supramental yoga, humanity should be variously represented. What does it mean? For the problem of transformation has to deal with all sorts of elements, favorable and unfavorable. The same man indeed carries in him a mixture of these two things. So ordinarily, if it is just self-realization, you suppress one part. Like you suppress, well, it's easy to teach the heart to be detached. But much more difficult to teach true love. No, you see, you're caught. Because detached, okay, fine. After some time, initially it is painful but or difficult. After some time, you're just cut off. But the moment you have to detach the ego and desire, yet continue like the divine does. Divine does precisely that. It becomes so much more difficult. If only sattvic and cultured men came for the yoga, men without very much of the vital difficulty in them, then because the difficulty of the vital element in terrestrial nature has not been faced and overcome, it might well be that the endeavor would fail. You may have some nice goody-goody people. So you have high-end shops where you get, you know, like in Spain, they showed me one chocolate and they said, yeah, this is the best place here. But when I saw the price, he said, $10 or something for one small little chocolate. I said, I am not buying. He said, no, Alokda, I am buying. I said, doesn't matter, you are buying or anybody is buying. This is a waste. This may be very good. But so you have to work upon all layers of humanity. You don't want to create a elitist society where just, you know, few evolved people are there. We're disconnected. This experiment has been tried of creating a kind of elitist society where you have few evolved people and the rest are sort of cut off. It went to that extent, that Adhikar Bhed, because of which, you know, certain sections of humanity were excluded. It was done with a good intention. But then eventually it will pull back. The idea was this only. You see, the entire thing came and then subsequently it degenerated into Brahminism and all it became. Because not everybody was ready. And so there was a selection. So the hymns were also given in double, with a double, triple meaning. You had to be initiated. But now times have changed because the whole of humanity has to be involved. And therefore, all that has to be pulled down. And then, now what is going to come is the general humanity will rise up. Which is what we see happening. Slowly but steadily. Otherwise, the sacred knowledge was only with a few. And the rest had to just receive it with faith, whether they understood or not, but they had to follow. So now he's saying, if we do that, the endeavor would fail. This question often comes, if the Vedic civilization was so high, why did it collapse? People often ask me, I said, see, obviously there were loopholes. You can pass it on to the cycles, but why the cycles come? Precisely because there are some loopholes. Like, you know, you see from Treta when it goes into Dwapar, loopholes were there. I mean, Lord Rama was embodying the best qualities and yet they were people within the collectivity who were not ready for what he came to establish. There might conceivably be, under certain circumstances, an over-mental layer superimposed on the mental, vital and physical and influencing them. but hardly anything supramental or a sovereign transmutation of the human being. So here there is a thorough pressure. It won't do to become just saintly person and do some magic, miracle, have some wonderful experiences. So because that doesn't transform, it superimposes itself on mental, vital and physical. So it doesn't, those things don't show up. They are there, but they don't show up. And that we know is the story of when mother went and spoke about the overmind creation, and Sri Aurobindo said, we don't want this. It'll create godlike beings. But still, there will be things which are underneath, which have never been really raised up or tackled. Those in the ashram come from all quarters and are of all kinds. And then he says, it cannot be otherwise. And then something even more interesting. In the course of the yoga, collectively, though not for each one necessarily, as each plane is dealt with, all its difficulties arise. That will explain much in the ashram that people do not expect. When the preliminary work is over in the laboratory, things must change. Also, finally, because we look at people based on purely external, good manners. If manners are the criteria, you see, when you go outside now, you people know, it can be very impressive. You know, an average person will call you, howdy, have a good day, and you're very impressed, my God, what a, you know. Isn't it? Shrimi is so open, and don't be deceived by appearances. This is a mask, you will know. Today or tomorrow, you'll know. But this is something which has been picked up. If you have to go by the gentle manliness and manner, they are already siddhas. So, he says, also much stress has not been laid on human fellowship of the ordinary kind between the inmates. Though good feeling, consideration and courtesy should always be there. Because that is not the aim. Mother speaks about this in her story of the Vanity Bazaar. A lot of people with hat and everything has gone. You see people how they give way and you know, you feel so wonderful. She says once there was a fire. And then she saw the gentleman. She didn't see, she said it was reported. All the so-called gentlemen who were representing the cream of the society were hitting with their sticks so that they can escape. That's what Titanic also portrayed. They're hitting others because they want to escape. That's when your ordinary humanity shows up. And such people who at that point of time can really... There are such people all over the world. That's very rare. It is a unity in a new consciousness that is the aim. And the first thing is for each to do his sadhana, to arrive at that new consciousness and realize oneness there. So this is what is happening all over the world, that the Philistine, as I would say, and the barbarian who was hidden inside, behind the facade is showing up. So they are very interesting, stories, but that's a different subject. Whatever faults are there in the sadhaks must be removed by the light from above. A sattvic rule can only change natures predisposed to a sattvic rule. So we can understand the complexity, the many layered heterogeneity of the ashram, the kind of work which is going on. So because many people, especially nowadays, at least I read, people want to come. And they must know. At one level it's a very nice thing. But because they have not seen the ashram, they don't understand the dynamics. So there is a section on conditions for admission. Now, what is the condition? Some people say, well, I have finished all my duties, I want to come here. Some people say that I want to just, spend my time in meditation and quietude, in peace. Now people have all these ideas, and maybe to participate in some bhajan, kirtan or some collective programs. Now the mother says something very interesting, something similar to what we have seen here, but she puts it in a little more different way. Do not judge on appearances. And do not listen to what people say, because these two are misleading. But if you find it necessary to go, of course you can go. And from an external point of view, it may be indeed wise. Somebody wants to go. Probably the same person. Dilip Kumar Roy, Sat Prem, these people used to get the urge to go. This is it maybe from a worldly point of view, wise. Moreover, it is not easy to remain here. In old time, the sadhaks used to say, the old time sadhaks if you meet, they would say, first year, don't talk about sadhana and all, just stay rooted. If you can stay on here for 3 years, 4 years, which is the time when you are normally taken in as an ashram inmate, 4 or 5 years, that means now at least you have got it right. Your 2 feet are steady on the ground because you understand the field and its operations almost intuitively. But you have to live here, not as just a, you know, going and coming. There is in the ashram no exterior discipline and no visible test. Nobody will tell you a list of do's and don'ts. Strange. There's no dress code, no common practice, no compulsion of anything. You have to go for collective meditation. You may or may not go. You have to do this, you have to do it. There is no exterior. So people who start saying that, no, mother always wanted this, always wanted that. It's not like that. There are instances where she has said certain things. But exterior rules are not there. And there is no visible test. But the inner test is severe and constant. And that as one grows conscious, one becomes aware. Things like, you know, outside world, with you know, somebody says something to you and you instantly react. Sometimes you, I would say, throw your weight based on where you stand. Humko nahi pehchanta hai kya? Things like that. It is almost inbuilt. Even like, don't you know me? You may not say, but there's that thing. Here, all this, supposing you thought, uttered is a big thing. Instantly something will tell you, ego. Then you'll say, I missed an opportunity to progress. It happens. I remember one of the first things when I came. There are things you learn as you grow. In spite of knowing everything, I've shared some of these experiences. And then you realize ki there is, and what makes you conscious? Outside you don't become conscious because these things are firstly never put to test. Outside people behave with you based on your hierarchy or position. So you will not find a driver refusing a doctor. Let's say an ambulance driver refusing a doctor something because he will be most respectful. But here he may say, nay, I don't want to. Now, you don't know how to react, or somebody you may meet who are working, co-workers, colleagues. And she says that you have to conquer your egoism. That should be your surmount. Okay. But the inner test is severe and constant. One must be very sincere in the aspiration to surmount all egoism and to conquer all vanity in order to be able to stay. If you have stayed, make sure, it will happen. That all the vanity, we live like that in outside life. You realize when you begin to live. It's such a world because you have fixed comfort zones with which you are moving. And the world moves according to the old order where, certain things are understood. There is, whether you call this or that, there is something called as a so-called privileged person. It's something inbuilt, automatic inside, and all these things go away here. So vanity that you are someone or something. So why she is saying sincere in the aspiration means how will it help? Because then you remember why am I here. Only thing that helps you, or the most important thing that helps you, to remind yourself, I have not come here to change this person, to point out that person's mistakes. I am here for the mother, for her service, to join myself more and more to her. Then sincerity in aspiration, that means, am I here for getting respect? Am I here for, being in comfort zones? Am I here for groupism? So all this we have to remember. And then again she speaks about surrender. A complete surrender is not outwardly exacted. Nobody says you have to surrender to the mother. Nobody says you have to have faith in Mother and Sri Aurobindo. There is nothing like that. But it is indispensable for those who wish to stick on. Look at the word, stick on. And many things come to test the sincerity of the surrender. If you have not surrendered, you will keep complaining all your life. 50 years, 60 years. If you have surrendered, you'll be so full of joy. Because you'll see that everything was an opportunity for you to surmount your, you know, ideas, your vitals, demands, your desires, and then you get the joy of being freed from desire, you progress, and you're so happy that the divine led you in this way on the journey. But if you have not surrendered, then there will be constant complaint about something or the other. So whenever somebody complains, don't start believing. Just understand, poor fellow, he has not been able to surrender. Don't give this advice. Otherwise, he will give you. You have only surrendered. You think, don't give any advice to anybody. That's a rule of life. Never give, first of all, any unasked advice. Second is, even when asked, most people want affirmation of their situation. They don't want advice. If you are, you feel inspired to say once, don't get into discussions. Either take it or leave it. So, however, so then there is nothing outward, but all is going on inside. Sincerity, surrender, aspiration. How are we going to navigate? Now here comes. The more, the greater the difficulty. It's very difficult to stay here. I am saying this now after 22 years of staying constantly. Okay, so at least there is something. And coming here since 40 years. So, but still. So, then what is the difference? So, but the grace and the help here are also tremendous. Commensurate with the difficulty. There are things which outside, if you were to experience, you will break down thoroughly. They may shatter you. But here they don't. They change you. And that's the beauty. So she says, however, the grace and the help are always there for those who aspire for them, and their power is limitless when received with faith and confidence. So if you have the faith and confidence, there is no obstacle, no difficulty, no resistance, no impossibility of nature that cannot change. I've all seen this, and I mean many people must have seen this. That if you just have to have the faith and trust that mother will set me right. Confidence in her grace. Not that mother will change the outer situation. That's not important. You change within, outer will change, or it will find its own place in the totality of things. This is another thing I have seen, that if you remain open to her, keep on connecting to her, then outer will slowly, in the vision of truth, things will reach where they should reach. Something very beautiful. And then she cautions us, it is not from disgust for life and people that one must come to yoga. That's why in the beginning, for a long time, the mother and Sri Aurobindo would not accept people who came in teenage. There were some two or three exceptions they had made, and there was a background to that. Usually it was in mid-30s, because you have seen life a little. And even then she would say, and once Amal Kiran said, mother, this one last time, I am going to Bombay. I think I have seen life enough. The mother says, seen it enough? Really? When do you say you have seen it enough? So, because that means you have developed a basic strength to deal with some of the challenges. So, don't come from... Later on, somehow, well, that's another story, that very young people started getting taken up. That's a different story altogether. But generally, mid-30s or 40, that is the time when most people are more or less ready to lead an ashram life. It is not to run away from difficulties that one must come here. Because all said and done, mother has made such an arrangement. It's Raj Rajeshwari's arrangement. If you go to other ashrams and see here, you go to the playground and sports ground and tennis ground and the kind of hygienic meal, clean meal, everything. So even your staying accommodation, I mean, it's by and large, you have to be just a little content and surrendered. She has taken care of everything. Medicine, you know, all this, all free dawa khana, and you can dictate everything. Not only this, you want to learn something. There are so many possibilities and opportunities to learn. So once you enter, you realize, I mean, she has created a world which is truly a heaven beyond heaven. But at the same time, to live in this heaven beyond heaven is not easy, because you cannot if you have the old consciousness. So that's the whole challenge here. And then she says something still further. Okay, not from disgust from life, not to run away from difficulties. It is not even to find the sweetness of love and protection. For the divine's love and protection can be enjoyed everywhere if one takes the right attitude. So this also is there, you know, that mother has been, Mother and Aurobindo's place, and you know, their stamp is everywhere. At least for me, that was a very important thing. Okay, disgust is nahi, kuch nahi, life is very nice, and you know, challenges of life is fine. But that, you know, that physically Mother and Aurobindo have lived here, their stamp, so that sweetness and love of the divine, even that you begin to feel outside, that is so true. You feel it outside wherever you are. So why should one want to come here? What is the condition for admission? This is not outward. There is no form on which anybody will ask. That's why these things are never asked. So you may wonder that if you tell this, people will take you in. No. Because everybody knows that it's so easy to tell. In our Air Force training, when people came for pilot selection, so they were asked, why do you want to join? So if they said, I am very Deshbhakti and all, they were rejected. So you are telling a lie. So if somebody says, I want some name and, you know, the glamour of the uniform and earn money, okay, fine. You're being honest. You just can't tell a lie. So you will see, which is very strange. Once somebody went to meet, that time there were two people who were part of the selection thing. One was named as Purushottam and the other was named as Vishveshwar. So the person said, I have come to, find the divine and all that. So we have a tendency to say this, no, find the divine, big thing. I want to have some experience. So he says, you have already met Purushottam and Vishveshwar. Now what do you want? So he took an offense. He said, they are not joking. They understand. That's your quest. Keep it to yourself. That's not something you come and, you know, like say big things and get an admission. But look what Mother is saying. It's an inner criteria. And what is the inner criteria? If none of these things, then you wonder what is it? So she says, when one wants to give oneself totally in service to the divine, because this is a place where you can do that. Anywhere else, you will be divided. There will be work which you have to do for your sustenance, livelihood. Your work you have to do to look after the family. And at the same time, you probably take out some time, go to the center or whatever way, or take an attitude that I am doing this for the divine. But it's all not easy because there are many consideration forces at play. So she says, if when one wants to give oneself totally in service to the divine, to consecrate oneself totally to the divine's work. Again and again she says, for this yoga, to the divine and his work. You will see this even in her reminiscences. The divine and his work. Because this is work of transformation. And his work, divine's work. Simply, and why? Not because I'll have some nice experiences after 1 year, I'll see Vasudevam Sarvamiti. So look what she's saying. Simply, for the joy of giving oneself and of serving. She says that the starting point of yoga is divine for the sake of the divine. For nothing else. What you will have, get, give, what experiences, all this becomes irrelevant. How do you love someone? So that joy of love and service. Without asking for anything in exchange. Mind you, he signs no contract. The contract is in your heart. In the faith, that's it. If you don't have this much faith, then it's not worth starting. So the contract is inside. Sure na, pakka, I'll be taking in, no? Itna bhi agar bharosa nahi hai. And he takes care of wonderfully. But you can't come with that idea that, you know, he will take care, therefore. That's different. That when you, even a human being, when you give yourself and give service, a good human being, he'll take care. But imagine the divine. He'll take care for all lives to come. And in ways beyond a reckoning. Mother has taken care of families. There are instances, quite a few, where one person came And the mother called entire family, sometimes two generations, three generations. That is her nature. Oh, this. And she has so said this, that okay, this person has given, then she would take care of everything. Yogshem Bahamyam, going to what extent? She takes care. But you can't do it with the idea, okay, now mother will take care of my family, therefore I must. There is no contract bargaining. There is no vyapar in pyar. So she says, simply for the joy of giving oneself and of serving without asking for anything in exchange, except, so she's making exception, although, now what is the exception? Oh, except, maybe we can ask for some experiences probably. She says, except the possibility of consecration and service. Mother, I want to serve more and more and more and more. Someone said very beautifully long, long back, I think it was Navjadji who had shared this with Vijay Bhai, and he said, now very difficult to remember, often people ask references. Well, it's very difficult because I have not only read all the books and disciples and others, but also because there are so many things which you know orally are transmitted anywhere. Some of these senior disciples, now very difficult to get back to the exact references. Even the books of disciples, not all are available like that. So I'm just saying, because people sometimes ask, Aluk, the exact reference kya hai? The bhaiya ab ho gaya wo 40 saal 50 saal se yahi kar raha abhi padhai. So I'm just saying that, you know, he said something very interesting. He said, if you do work, when you do work for the mother, she doesn't tell you, okay, you have done well, now you can take rest. She raises the bar. So if you do that rightly, the sign will be more work will come. If you do that nicely, more work will come. Till one day you will be submerged in her. There will be no moment left for yourself. Matlab, literally, you can say ki Bhagwan ne ek moment chhoda nahi hai tumhe tumhare liye. And there is a great delight in that. Because then you realize how she has taken you completely into yourself. She leaves nothing for yourself. Everything she takes into herself. She's okay, khali baitha hai, okay. This khurafati mind, you know, this fellow sitting idle, his mind is, she knows everything that is happening. That his mind is like a vagabond or going, she'll give you some work because work you are doing well. There are instances where there are people who really had even a psychological breakdown and who would suddenly, you know, go berserk. And when they went to the mother, and she would ask, how is he in the work? So he said, no, mother, he does the work well. Okay, then don't worry, continue. That's it. Work is purification, work is sadhana, work is transformation. And work comes naturally to us, so that way it is the easiest. Accept the possibility of consecration and service, then one is ready to come here and will find the doors wide open. Not only open, but wide open. At one point, there was someone here, now he is no more, very fine person. So again, he came and then whole family came. Like that, mother would pick up, and then slowly the yoga, everybody will catch something or the other. So he came as a hockey coach. He knew hockey. He said, I can teach hockey. So he is one of those during Kashmir, all this exodus which was taking place. So mother said, okay. So he asked mother about meditation and all this. Mother said, you don't need to do, you will progress 10 times more through work. Finished. He showed me the letter himself. So there are such instances where only through work. So if you are looking standard, how many hours somebody is meditating, you will be completely misled. So this is a very different kind of a place. And then she says that, well, this is about, if you are ready to give yourself completely, wanting nothing in exchange, for the joy of giving to the divine and the work. She is not even saying the divine. That's a big thing. But at least for the work. Because that is something tangible with which one can connect. Giving to the divine means thought, feelings, everything are there for the divine. It's more difficult. She is not putting that condition here. That happens automatically. She is just saying work. Because giving to the divine means then no thought, feelings, anything. Because you have now given to the divine. Surrendered to the divine. Then you can't say you are thinking of something, someone and all this. So she's not asking that. She's asking in work. Consecrate oneself to the divine's work. Repeatedly. And then she says, I give you the blessings given to all my children, wherever they are in the world, and tell you, prepare yourself, my help will always be with you. So they see, immediately brings in the larger context, the inner ashram, which is spread out everywhere. And she says that the spiritual life demands, she's not saying that I have put demands or the ashram demands. The spiritual life demands that one is exclusively turned towards the divine and the divine alone. All that one does should be done for the divine. All occupations, all aspirations, all without exception. And there is a list where she says everything, including relationship, should be turned toward the divine. Not for your personal satisfaction, not for your self-gratification, not for your pleasure, none of this. Everything. With a complete surrender of the whole being. And then she says, I know that this cannot be done in a day. But the decision that it may be so should be taken in an unshakable manner. It's a long time, sometimes very, very long. But it should be clear that, dekho boss, apna kuch bachne wala nahi hai, sorry for the Hindi. Look here, nothing is going to remain which you can claim as your. She will take it, make sure. So you have a choice either to transmute it along those terms or else it'll just go away, because this is the law of spiritual life. You can't help it. So who is a disciple? Much more than any physical condition. It's not about living in the ashram. Now she is, you know, opening the doors to everyone. It is faithfulness to the ideal and consecration to the work that make the true disciple. First indispensable condition to be admitted in the ashram, the candidate must have taken the resolution to dedicate his life unconditionally to the service of the divine. Again, you see. Now then, how do we connect with that letter of Sri Aurobindo? All kinds of people are taken. Yes, they all come, they are given a work, you have to take that. But then they will come from very, very different levels and they are all accepted. And then the working starts. All may not have that kind of aspiration or even a conscious aspiration. They come for various reasons outwardly, but there is something behind which pulls them, draws them, which we don't understand. And their outer nature may be very, very different. And that is the divine Leela, where she draws all kinds of people for a work. What are the virtues required? Is it a capacity to meditate for long hours? Is it that one must have read all the books of Mother and Sri Aurobindo? What is required to be in the ashram? So she says, by definition, the ashramite has resolved to consecrate his life to the realization and service of the divine. For this, four virtues are indispensable, without which progress is uncertain and subject to interruptions and troublesome falls at the first opportunity. So what are the four virtues required? Sincerity. She would keep on saying sincerity, sincerity, sincerity. Sure you want this. So to align oneself starts with central sincerity, which means yes, your aim should not, there should be no wavering. Central sincerity first about the aim. If that is there, then that it will grow slowly. Everything has to be aligned to this one truth. That takes time. But the central sincerity, this is what one is here for. Faithfulness. She's not asking that you should have read the Vedas, Upanishads, scriptures. No. You should have gone to temples, done a lot of worship. You should be a vegetarian. Nothing. These things are all outer. A man may be very religious and very asuric. Sri Aurobindo says, some asuras are very religious. So one has to be, these are not the criteria. Sincerity, faithfulness to the ideal and to the Mother and Sri Aurobindo, of course. Modesty, vanities, you know, just the opposite. Now I'm in an elite class, I'm someone special. No, modesty. You should be ready to advance slowly, not wanting some to become a big sadhak or, you know, a yogi. I have heard names, things like integral yogi. So I said, Sri Aurobindo ne apne saath nahi lagaya. He didn't put that name on himself. And, you know, there are people who call sometimes themselves. And they are introduced like they're integral yogi. What is that specimen? So all kinds of things people say. You have to become like a child, ready to be identified with the most ordinary of the ordinary. Then you are ready. So modesty and gratitude. So wonderful. The fact, if one asks me about the ashram, tell me one reason to be grateful. I would say there are plenty, countless. But the fact that she has called my name and put me in, what more I require? That's more than enough. You know, just to be a monkey in the service of Lord Rama when the war is being fought. Do you need anything more? Do you need a title? Do you need to be a senapati or something like that? That's enough. So that's where that, you know, she has called. And it applies to anyone. Whoever has turned towards Mother and Sri Aurobindo, if you ask one reason to be grateful, see, billions and trillions of people, I don't know how many billions, probably I may be mistaken, are there in this world. Manushyanam sahasrenu. Out of that few aspire genuinely to a spiritual life. Not like 25,000 take a course and do some fashion and go back. Not about that. True spiritual life. Who seek aspiration as a weekend. Out of them, of all the things, to be so much into the future where the avatar of the future literally comes and takes you in. I mean, how many? So if you see that way, what more will one require? You are sitting now in the supramental ship. Captain is steering it. What else is required? What goals? What other things are important? So, I say this. Supposing you are sitting in a ship of which God is the captain. Supposing you didn't get food properly one day or you fell sick. Will you worry? God is the captain. That's the end of the story. He'll take care. Because he's taking care of all that is going on now within him. He is responsible for. All this must be accompanied. Okay, what qualities are... Oh, okay, this is another one. What qualities are necessary for one to be called a true child of the ashram? Now it is raising the bar. Huh? True child of the ashram. It doesn't become just because you have studied in the school, just because you have been here for 50 years, just because you have never gone out, just because you are doing some, you know, none of these things he is mentioning. Look at it. What is the quality? He is saying sincerity, number one. Courage. Courage implies many things. Honesty, truthfulness, all this aspect of courage. Courage to leave behind the past. Courage to leave toward the future. Discipline, so important. It's just regularity and punctuality which is there in the ashram. And Sri Aurobindo says that itself brings in a discipline, because I often give this example. Supposing you have to reach at 8 o'clock and best is nobody is punching anything here. You may not come whole day and nobody will. Probably, you know, somebody will notice, but with a concern. Ah, what happened? Is he unwell? That's all. Nobody is going to mark you. That's it. And yet when you come in time, supposing you have to come in time at 8 o'clock or 8:30. You will start working backward. All the things you have to do. Now what is happening? There is a mastery over nature. You can't afford to say, okay, 8:30 boss, no, 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 8:30 ka na chalega. It's okay, I can reach at 9, let me just talk, chat. No. And when you do it day after day, months after months, years after years, it gets into your system, that discipline comes in. I'm just saying one simple thing. I was told this when I said, oh, there is no work, what do I do? So, I started reading. So, somebody said, no, no, Mother and Sri Aurobindo's books, because they, no, no, you're not supposed to read. So, I said, okay, then what do I do? Because there is no work, I'm just sitting. So, I realized Divine is giving me Nivrati from Pravrati. Is it, you want to do something. When you don't do something, it's a very, I mean, you're sitting there first. If a customer comes, you will show. Marbling department. So, if nobody is there, sometimes you may sit for 2 hours, nobody will come. As it is located, you know, so many steps high and hardly anything on inconspicuously. So, what do you do? So then I realized, okay, let me do what the Lord was doing. So I started walking up and down, taking Mother's name. I said, okay, walking meditation I can do. You know, but there is no objection to that. So walking up and down, if somebody comes, you come in. Sometimes you sit quietly. So you see, it is that discipline comes into the system. So this is where discipline of, and inner discipline also. Nobody's saying, there is no external compulsion. It's your own inner discipline. Like some people have this inner discipline. I'll give you one other example. There's such certain things given free in the ashram. Sometimes cheese will come. Sometimes, you know, fruits will come. Milk, whatever. So there are two kinds of people. There are those who will take extra. Sometimes for somebody else. And there are others who know they don't need it and they'll give it away. Both kinds. I don't need it. You tell them, no, but cheese you could have brought, we could have used. No. I don't need it. Why should I take it? Now you see that inner discipline. See, it's a small act. But it requires a kind of inner discipline. Endurance. That's very important. Pondicherry as such teaches you endurance. The ashram. Living here, endurance. There are only, there used to be three seasons. Now we have hot, hotter, hottest. Now we have very pleasant seasons, everything. So people have done it in the beginning. We all have done it, going on a cycle, even at, you know, midday in May, June, when it's very hot. You don't feel it because it's mother's work for which you are doing with the joy in the heart. So you can't say, oh my God, it's so hot. Oh my God, it's so hot. What shall I do? What shall I do? AC aake. No. If it's there, no, there's no taboo. But at the same time, you just have to have that endurance. Endurance, because there will be external tests from, as I said, people, unexpected things. Absolute faith in the divine work and unassailable trust in the divine grace. That's what is required. Just imagine. Absolute faith in the divine grace. Unassailable trust. Even if the world says, when I came in the beginning, so some people will say, now, you know, mother is not there. I said, please, excuse me. One of the old time sadhikas, I said, excuse me. That's not right. Say, no, you may not understand. I said, I understand fully what you're saying, what I'm telling you. Maybe for you she's not there. But for us she has always been there. That trust that she's there and she's taking care, always looking at us, whatever is required, she will do. Whatever is needed, she will give. That kind of absolute trust, that's required. And all this must be accompanied by a sustained, ardent and persevering aspiration and by limitless patience. Are you, she didn't ask that you have to fast on special days. She didn't say you have to give up this, you know, your most tasty food. Why is she not asking all that? She's not saying that please stop eating rasgullas the moment you come. Strange. All inner qualities, patience, aspiration. The ashram is meant for those who want to consecrate their lives to the divine. And then finally, okay, those, this would be very few. Many, for various reasons, either the ordinary humanity shows up or initially, 100 reasons, sometimes people come because their relative is here and, you know, they like to call and there's a comfort zone. So what happens to, you know, them? So ashram will not take any action. By and large, 99%. If you don't want to come, if you are insincere, nobody is going to tell you, hey, you. So then what happens? So Shubindu is, now mother is cautioning us. One loses most of the advantage of being here. Aage kuch padhne ki zarurat nahi hai. That's it. You are the loser. You got such an opportunity. Opportunity of a, I won't say one lifetime. lifetimes. If you don't get the opportunity, it's okay. But when you get opportunity one of lifetimes, you can't afford to lose it. Put yourself fully into it. Okay, proper conduct. What is the conduct code? Some kind of dress code must be there. Food code and dress code. Only two things people think. I have been to certain ashram. They are so insistent on food. Food code. They told me, oh, you are a vegetarian. You are already half. I said, excuse me, I am a vegetarian because my parents are vegetarian. Later on, I made a conscious choice also. But Hitler was also vegetarian. I have heard about it. So was Aurangzeb, if we are to rely on some accounts. How can one be so foolish? So, anyways, that's each one's concern. And she says, I know that people are fussy and unreasonable. She knew everything. So what is the solution? She doesn't believe in giving lectures. Mother says, but unless their consciousness changes, what else can we expect from them? Period. Question mark. Change of consciousness. That's the thing. If you don't, you lose this opportunity. That's it. Nobody else is the loser. People are here to change their consciousness. Unless they become, all of them, true to their aim, nothing true can be done. For the divine, it's a moment in eternity. We give so much importance. This is one of the countless things she's doing all over the world. At one place he says, maybe we can start in the Himalayan gorge. Then she says, but it won't be taking all the... Divine is bound to nothing. This is our idea. She can start the same process million times if necessary. That's what she says. Because the divine, she will accomplish, that's for sure. But ultimately, humanity goes through difficulties. That's what she contemplates. I don't want pralaya again. Humanity is not ready, but I don't want that again. Because so much is lost, so much struggle. People talk of pralaya so lightly. So I tell them, bhaiya, malum hai kya hoga? Cave se shuru karna hai phir se. Matlab, it's not about you. It's about humanity going through all this, whatever it be. Progress it has made. In many areas, it has made tremendous progress. You can't let it collapse just like that. So even if few, they must put their 100% in it. It is evident that those who want to live here must change. Change what? Again. Must change. Not so much their way of living as their way of being. So again. Once you read, all these things are so clear. She has not left any ambiguity. It's not like now I'll wear only khadao. Though I tried that. I realized. Ghar mein pehante the. So I thought. Maybe it's a nice idea. I realized. My discomfort I can take in. But so much cutter. Sound it makes. It was regarded as something very sacred. See, Brahmin family, after all. These things were regarded very sacred. Few things I gave up in the beginning. Janeu. But there are many things which are regarded very sacred. You can't take the name of God unless you have taken bath. First thing is, go take bath. Whatever, finish your things and do the bath. Now first thing I do is send the morning prayers. It's such a joy. Remembering the mother is such a joy to wake up and just say, Ma, 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 even if for a few moments, it's so wonderful. So that's where she says that it's your way of being. We are striving towards a consciousness more deep, more total, and more true. Not only deep, but encompassing whole area of life. And true. It's not external change. It will come when it has to come. Outer man is the last to change. Because our raison d'etre is to manifest this consciousness. What is the use of being a sadhak? If as soon as we act like the ignorant ordinary man. She has written everything, but left us given complete freedom to each one. Because if you don't, you are the loser. Nobody else is loser. Okay, one place she says, all my children are Brahmins. Somebody raised this issue. So she says, the moment one enters the life of the ashram and takes up the yoga, he ceases to belong to any creed or caste or race. He is one of Sri Aurobindo's disciples and nothing else. Even if somebody asks you in sleep, you are just a disciple. One last thing we will do. Read. So this also, because we have a tendency to go back to the past. This is the problem. So she says, it has been repeatedly stated that all provincial spirit is quite out of place in the ashram and cannot be tolerated. Still we have all kinds of bhavan, where you have people who are belonging to a certain. It's not in light of Mother and Shri. You have to become vast. And to imagine having a family spirit and provincial spirit and all this has to go, because the consciousness has to become so vast. All including. But then, that's how. She says, I am sorry to say, she says, see the gentlemanliness of the mother, that the meeting which took place yesterday has displaced the most narrow and silly provincial tendency. People still continue to do. How much ever you may quote this, ultimately you are looking for your comfort zone. It's okay. I mean, again, we are not to change anyone, but it should be clear. And of course, she didn't want to put any politics. So it is understood that the ashram is not a place for politics because it's based on falsehood. We have nothing to do with it. Morality is the shield that men flourish to protect themselves against truth. My God, so wonderful, powerful. First he says, politics is based on falsehood. We have nothing to do with it. Morality is the shield that men flourish to protect themselves against truth. It is only the divine's will that is unquestionable. And it is that which man, in all his actions, deforms and falsifies. How beautiful, how powerful. So what is her position? She made a declaration, especially after there was an attack on the ashram. She says, we do not fight against any creed, any religion. We do not fight against any form of government. We do not fight against any special social class. We do not fight against any nation or civilization. We are fighting against division, unconsciousness, ignorance, inertia, and falsehood. We are endeavoring to establish upon earth union, knowledge, consciousness. So whatever one does, they should be fully aware of things. Truth. And we fight whatever opposes the advent of this new creation of light, peace, truth, and love. So the fight is against whatever is opposing, because there are representations also. Individually and collectively. But not per se. That I belong to this race and this therefore. And in the end, we will close with something very beautiful. Mother is with all those. In a general sense, she is with everyone. But specifically as the incarnation. Mother is with all those who are sincere in their aspiration towards a divine life above party and politics. Okay, Chema.